Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me is Rob Britton. You are listening on the radio.com app. You can always lock in this phone number, 913-576-7610, to interact with the show. We'll talk about Le'Veon Bell momentarily. We'll head to Miami and Buffalo, two of the other teams and cities that are in contention for Le'Veon Bell. We'll do that coming up in 15 minutes. But again, it's The Drive. Carrington here, Sean here, and Rob here. How you guys doing today?
I'm cool. I'm having a good day. I got a tour of the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile earlier, so obviously it's going pretty well for me.
So we normally have Mind of the Machine at 3:15. Today I made a trade. Oh. So Kurt Warner was supposed to be going on the night show with Bank. He was supposed to record that at 3:15. I then negotiated and brokered a deal with Jay Binkley in order for us to have Kurt Warner. I had to trade him a burrito from Chipotle, double meat, had to get him chips and guacamole and a six-pack of his choice. I feel like I made a smart trade. I feel like I made a very good trade. I've never paid for somebody to come on the show before, but if you get a chance for a Hall of Fame quarterback and all it's going to cost you is like $17, I feel like I made the right trade.
I thought you were going to say that now I have to go on his show tonight and do Mind of the Machine. So yeah, we got Kurt Warner. That's great.
So coming up in about an hour and a half, we will be joined by Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner will join us on the show. Before we get to the Le'Veon Bell whip around coming up in about 15 minutes, let's get you the latest report from NFL Network and Mike Garafola.
The time frame on this one seemed like it was going to happen relatively quickly, but I learned a couple of years ago, don't put a timeline on Le'Veon Bell, because we kept talking about when he was going to come back to the Steelers. And then he never did. So we'll see about the timeline. But the teams involved are the Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills, as well as the Miami Dolphins, as has been reported. And really, the Bills confirmed that. Then Andy Reid asked about it and said, go ask Brett Veach. He handles that stuff, which is his way of saying I'm not answering that question. But the Chiefs are firmly in it. In fact, I was told by two sources today that the Chiefs thought it was going to be wrapped up as soon as last night. And then it kind of drifted into today with Bell considering multiple teams. Tom, I am told, do not discount the possibility of the Dolphins here. We know that Bell lives in Miami, trains down there. Despite the fact they have the worst record amongst those three teams, that could wind up being his landing spot.
I don't know where Le'Veon Bell is going to sign. I also don't know if the same thing isn't happening in Miami or Buffalo when it comes to the smoke, but there's been a lot of smoke around Le'Veon Bell signing with Kansas City. I know a couple people that hit me, nothing I felt really solid enough to report on, but there is just a lot of smoke right now around Le'Veon Bell signing with the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll see what happens, but I do expect by the end of business today that we will find out where Le'Veon Bell's next team is going to be.
Yeah, but sometimes in the NFL where there's smoke, for whatever reason, there's not fire, because literally, so what is his story, like 24, 36 hours old, that's it? And I've heard, so yesterday he was down to his top eight teams. I read an article literally in the middle of the night last night that he was down to his final six teams. Fowler's reporting he's down to his final three. And then I decided to just like type into my search bar, Le'Veon Bell 2. And I did that for every single NFL team. And there was literally a story, like a Pete Sweeney version of every other team, except for the 49ers. Like Kyle Shanahan was asked a question and he rebutted with, "No, I like the guys that we have. I'm good on Le'Veon Bell." So he shot it down. But literally everybody else had a story on why Le'Veon Bell would fit for their team. So, yeah, Kansas City's certainly in the running. The difference between some of these teams, though, and the Chiefs, I think, is there's probably some teams that actually need Le'Veon Bell. Like, he'd get in the fold and he wouldn't just be a backup. He'd be the starter right away. And a team like the Dolphins, they could probably actually not build their team around him, but he could be a focal point of an offense like that. With the Chiefs, he's just another piece.
I was told by a lot of people yesterday that that Andy Reid has always liked Le'Veon Bell. They were really interested in Le'Veon Bell, and he sort of priced himself out of it whenever he ended up deciding for the Jets. So I do think the interest is mutual between the Chiefs and Le'Veon Bell. We'll see what happens. We'll learn more from the Miami perspective and the Buffalo perspective coming up in just a little bit. But let's talk about the game next Monday between the Chiefs and the Bills. And you think the tone of this game has taken a 180 over the last couple of days?
Oh, it clearly did. I mean, if we would have heading into this game, so if this would have been played last week and both teams were undefeated, I think whoever came out of it, we would say that's the team. That's the team to beat at least early on in the season. And now it's not like both teams are just coming off of a loss. Both teams are coming off of a really bad loss. Now, I'm not talking about to the opponent, because Tennessee's a pretty good football team, still undefeated, and the Chiefs coming off the loss to the Raiders, and let's call the Raiders what they are. They're 3-2 right now. It's just the way both the games happen, where the Raiders put it on the Chiefs. The final score isn't as much of an indicator of how much Las Vegas really dominated that game. And I don't even remember what the final score was from the Buffalo-Tennessee game, but Tennessee put it on them. So it's big for the standings, because whoever wins this game is still right near the top. Whoever loses, though, all of a sudden, they have two losses, which would be more losses than Baltimore, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. Right now, the Chiefs, throw Buffalo in there, and then you're going to be with teams like New England and the Raiders, who have two losses, and Indianapolis. So whoever loses, the truth is, in the standings, really kind of falls back with the pack.
I actually think that this game is as equally as important in the standings as the Week 3 game against the Baltimore Ravens. Now, we didn't circle it. We probably won't hype it the same as we did that Monday Night Football game against Baltimore. And maybe people don't consider Buffalo to be the same contending team as they do with Buffalo, but they're a 4-1 team. They just lost to Tennessee. If they beat you, they'll be at 5-1. They still have multiple games against New England. They've got a game against Seattle. They've got a game against Pittsburgh. Like, they got a chance to be 13-3 with some very important tiebreakers if they do it. I sort of look at this as a one seed elimination game. If Kansas City wins this game, I think it all but eliminates Buffalo from at least the one seed conversation, and it gives Kansas City the necessary tiebreakers that you're going to need at the end of the season to be the number one overall seed and get that all important bye here. I think this game in terms of seeding is as important as the game against Baltimore was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, because if Buffalo loses, then they won't have the tiebreaker against Tennessee and Kansas City, two teams you could come down to at the end. And if the Chiefs end up winning this game, then they'll have the game in hand versus Buffalo and against Baltimore, two teams they could see at the end. So I'm with you. Like, this is one of those games where right now in the standings, because if you really look at it, man, let's say Buffalo loses this game and they've got two losses and the Patriots win their next couple of games. Well, then all of a sudden, Buffalo's not even a first-place team. Let's say the Chiefs lose this game and the Raiders win their next game. Well, the Chiefs aren't even in first place then. So it's one of these things where right now in the standings, it's important. It's important because you don't want to have back-to-back losses. But more important than that, the point that you're making, it's probably going to come down to these teams' bigger picture. And I think at some point it's going to get so jumbled together where somebody's probably going to go 13-3, like you said. There might be a couple of 12-4 teams, couple 11-5s. It's going to be really close and likely come down to that tiebreaker, and this is one of those games.
This is also one of those games to me where I think it really goes to show you the razor-thin margin of how we sort of evaluate teams, because let's say that Buffalo loses this game as they're the underdogs in Vegas to lose this game, and I think they're playing a team that's better than them, and the Kansas City Chiefs. You go from 4-0 to 4-2. You've lost two games against playoff teams in the AFC, and the only other quote-unquote good team that you played, and maybe we're putting Vegas in that category, but you played the Rams. You were up 28-3 in that. You almost blew a lead there. Like, I think a lot of the perception is really going to change on Buffalo. Kansas City's made here. They're the defending Super Bowl champion, and last year they went through that spell in October. No one is going to write off Kansas City or say this team isn't for real or isn't legitimate. Josh Allen is fighting for legitimacy and validation. The Bills are fighting for the exact same thing. I think this game means more to Buffalo because of that than it means for Kansas City.
I agree, unless it's a Buffalo beatdown, unless they do the same thing that the Raiders did last week. And then I think it's going to open a lot of eyes and people are going to say, what's the problem? Because I feel like most Chiefs fans and even the people in this room are chalking that Raiders game up to the Raiders had a really good game plan, but also the Chiefs just played their worst football. Like, it was the worst we've seen. Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark and Pat was pretty bad for most of that game. It wasn't a good game, and we're chalking it up to that. But if the same thing happens on Monday afternoon football at 4 o'clock this upcoming Monday, then maybe there is a bigger problem.
I mean, I'd be really surprised if they went out here and got really smacked around by Buffalo. Like, I think you're going to get the best effort that you can get from the Kansas City Chiefs. We talked a whole lot about the game against Baltimore, how that was a game they had circled. That was a game that they really went out and put their best foot forward. I think if you ask the Chiefs to a man, they know that they went out there and they've turned some subpar efforts together and still won football games in this game against Buffalo. I think there's enough mutual respect there, and there is enough of that for the new kid on the block. Like, Buffalo is trying to be where Kansas City is. I think that the Chiefs will view the Bills sort of as one of those comers, and I remember Therese made the analogy a couple of weeks ago about the 98 Bulls. Like, the Bulls always arose to the occasion against the Sonics or the Utah Jazz. Maybe they would lose a game to the Raptors, but against the Pacers, you would get the best version of them. That's what I expect with the Kansas City Chiefs. The Bills are not going to get the Chiefs' C effort. They're not going to get them looking past them. You're going to get the best version of the Chiefs, and we'll see if the Bills can handle it.
Well, if the Rain Man, Sean Kemp, comes to town, you better bring your A game. The Chiefs have played up to their competition, but they've also played down to their competition. I mean, look at it. They played a New England team without Cam Newton. That's not a good football team. That's not that talented of a football team. That game was way too close. The Chargers, it was the first time we saw Justin Herbert. No reason that game was that close. The Raiders game, the Chiefs are clearly a better, more talented football team, but the vice versa is true also. First game of the season, we said, oh, it's Houston. It's Deshaun versus Pat, and the Chiefs pantsed them. Same thing with the Baltimore game. So this feels like one of those games, like you're saying, where the Chiefs should play up to their competition because Buffalo is one of those teams. It's not like you can overlook the Buffalo Bills. They were really good last year. Josh Allen's in the MVP conversation, and they're coming off their first loss. So I agree with you. Buffalo's going to get the best version of the Chiefs.
So there was a tweet earlier today from Jeremy Fowler that said, Le'Veon Bell currently plans to sign with one of three teams per source, Dolphins, Chiefs, and Bills. Barring a change, Bell will likely decide amongst these three teams as early as today. That is from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. So we'll head to Miami and Buffalo to get their perspective on where former All-Pro running back Le'Veon Bell could potentially end up as his next NFL destination. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. You can interact with the show at 913-576-7610. So Jeremy Fowler of ESPN sent this tweet out earlier today. Le'Veon Bell currently plans to sign with one of three teams, the Dolphins, the Chiefs, or the Bills. Barring change, Bell will decide amongst these teams as early as today. A Steelers reunion is unlikely at this point. So we've already talked about it from the Kansas City perspective. Let's head to Miami and Buffalo to get their perspective. Let's first start with Miami and Zach Krantz at WQAM 560 in Miami. Zach, let's start here. What's the likeliness that you think Le'Veon Bell signs with the Dolphins?
Well, I mean, he's got a place down here. So, if he would want to come down here, obviously, like, and part of those three teams, this would be great. The running game for the Dolphins is Miles Gaskin right now, even with Matt Breida signed in the offseason or traded for, and then Jordan Howard signed. Another running back like Le'Veon Bell, how do you say no to that, especially when Miles Gaskin is your leading guy right now? If he wants to come down here, the money's okay. I can't see it going wrong here for the Dolphins unless there's an attitude thing, not a football thing.
You got a chance to watch Bell, him being in the AFC East. How much do you think he has left in the tank?
He hasn't played in a while either. Remember that. I mean, he went from being a guy that was carrying the ball or catching the ball, 20-plus times a game for Pittsburgh, and then all of a sudden it was a year off, and kind of with the time with the Jets, really not too much real football being played either, I guess, because he's not getting too many carries and not being used too much. He's got a little left in the tank. I know that. It's still Le'Veon Bell. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's two. If he stretches it more than that, congratulations. But this is a 2 or 3 year deal that he's looking for to cash in again, and if the money's okay, why not add Le'Veon Bell to a team that's trying to get to the playoffs and turn this whole thing around?
People have been basically saying he's going to make his choice depending on either what his role is going to be or the chances of the team actually winning the Super Bowl. So you'd go to Buffalo or Kansas City for the latter, but it seems to me like if you want to play, Miami's a pretty good spot.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a good spot. If you want to play football, you want to get the ball a lot, and maybe have the whole offense kind of now center around you, obviously Kansas City and Buffalo – you want to go to a Super Bowl, those are probably two of your favorites right there in the AFC, and Kansas City to win the whole thing again. Miami's a destination where you can come in here, and if you're a good enough player at a position of need, and the Dolphins right now I think still need that, why not come to Miami?
Miami's been a weird team this year. I actually bet on them versus San Francisco last week, and they hit that on the money line. Do you think with the expanded playoffs that Miami considers themselves a playoff team?
I think with Brian Flores, I've learned one thing. He's only been here one season, and how many games this year, five games this year. He's hasn't been around for 10 years, but in what I've kind of learned from him, even from the beginning of last season, when it was all tank for Tua, get us a quarterback, we're in rebuilding mode. He tried to win games, which I think a lot of fans were okay with and still not okay with because they wanted to make sure they got that number one pick or close to it. He wants to win. He thinks there's a chance that there's a win every game, so I'm okay with that, the way he kind of talks and the way that this team has played this year. One game they're really good on defense, one game they're close. They need a couple more players. That's obviously why there's two first and two seconds next year and still money in free agency. But you got to add pieces to get better. Le'Veon Bell, I think in a two-year span, definitely gets the team better.
That is Zach Kranz giving us the Miami perspective, as there is presumed to be three teams that are in on the Le'Veon Bell sweepstakes. We got the Miami perspective. WQAM in Miami. Thanks, Zach.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks so much.
That was Miami. Let's head to Buffalo right now with Jay Skursky as he joins us on the drive. Jay, what are you hearing about Le'Veon Bell and the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, Sean McDermott today, the Bills head coach, basically confirmed that they are interested in Le'Veon Bell, and that's pretty unusual for him. He usually downplays reports like that, but it's no secret that the Bills are definitely interested and are making a push here to try to bring him in.
I was actually reading about it today, and I saw a couple people saying that Buffalo is maybe the best fit for Le'Veon Bell. What do you think makes them the best fit?
Well, you know, I think when you look at the opportunity that he would have here, the Bills running game has not gotten off to a very good start this year. They do have a couple of promising players. Devin Singletary is a second-year running back, and then Zach Moss, who they drafted, is still just a rookie, but he's been dealing with an injury. I think Le'Veon Bell would come in here and would very quickly move to the top of that running back depth chart. And, you know, this is a Bills offense that's been off to a very, very good start. Obviously, this past week, week five against the Titans, didn't go the way that they would hope. But you know, a 4-1 record to start the season, a really promising young quarterback in Josh Allen, and this is a team that, you know, is gearing up for what they hope is a deep playoff run. So I think Le'Veon Bell, when he looks at this situation in terms of, you know, A, playing time, and then B, you know, the potential to win, I think that the Bills check a lot of boxes for him.
I was just going to ask you about what do you think his role on the team would be. So Zach Moss, he was injured, didn't play in their last game. Devin Singletary is their number one. Do you think that Bell could come in and be the number one running back for the Bills?
Well, I don't know that he would do it right away. I still think that they believe in Devin Singletary, who had a pretty promising rookie year. But, you know, as I mentioned, he has not been off to a real good start to this year. You know, his season high for rushing yards in a game is only 71. He's been held to 56 yards or less in four of the other five games. And that includes this week, where he had just 25 yards on 11 carries. So he's coming off of, you know, probably his toughest game of the season. So I think at worst, Le'Veon Bell comes in and it sort of provides that, you know, maybe a complimentary third down back type of thing. But I think there would be every opportunity for him to very quickly win that starting job, you know, if he shows that ability.
Jay, we've been kind of trying to answer the question all week here, what happened to the Chiefs in their last game? So I'll ask you the same thing about Buffalo. What happened in that game against the Titans?
Yeah. Well, you know, their defense has not done real well all season. And, you know, they were able to cover it up because the offense had been scoring 30 points a game. Well, the offense, ran into some turnover problems on Tuesday night against the Titans, and the defense continued to struggle. They were without Tre'Davious White, who's their all-pro cornerback. Matt Milano, who's a very important piece of their defense, starting linebacker, was out as well. But that totally doesn't totally excuse the flaws of the defense. But the problem was that the offense turned the ball over, special teams turned the ball over. It was a total team loss. I mean, from the coaching staff not having the team ready to go to all three phases of the game, it was just a really ugly game. It's a game that the Bills are going to try to erase here and show that, hey, this is not us. This is who we are as a football team. It was a one-game slip-up. That's what they have to hope happens.
I would imagine when the schedule came out, Jay, at the beginning of the year, that Buffalo fans and the team alike kind of circled this game coming up. How excited is the city, and does it feel like Buffalo is kind of using this game as a measuring stick to find out where they are?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think every team that's got the defending Super Bowl champions on the schedule would be doing that. You know, certainly the way that this game has played out in terms of being moved now to a different day, and unfortunately the fans are not allowed here in New York State, so there will not be any fans in attendance. I think that has taken a little bit of the shine off of the game. I know there's a great deal of disappointment from fans that they're not going to be able to be there. But in terms of what this, you know, what this game means for kind of getting a measuring stick of where this team is, it's the biggest game of the season for them. I mean, this is a huge opportunity, not just to measure themselves against the best team in the NFL, but then to also, as I just said, show that they can put what was a pretty ugly loss to Tennessee behind them and get their season going back in the right direction.
That was our Le'Veon Bell whip around with Miami, some Buffalo Bills, and some week six between the Chiefs and the Bills from Jay Skirsky joining us today on The Drive. Jay, really appreciate your time, man. Thanks a lot for coming on today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
That is Jay Skirsky joining us today on the show. Coming up in a little bit, we'll play quarterback categories and we'll continue talking about Le'Veon Bell, who has it narrowed down to three teams, the Chiefs, the Dolphins, and the Bills, on where he is going to play. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive. Coming up in a little bit, we'll play quarterback categories. We'll also get you a brand spanking new Levine's List. Let's get you the latest on Le'Veon Bell.
The time frame on this one seemed like it was going to happen relatively quickly, but I learned a couple of years ago, don't put a timeline on Le'Veon Bell, because we kept talking about when he was going to come back to the Steelers. And then he never did. So we'll see about the timeline. But the teams involved are the Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills, as well as the Miami Dolphins, as has been reported. And really, the Bills confirmed that. Then Andy Reid asked about it and said, go ask Brett Veach. He handles that stuff, which is his way of saying I'm not answering that question. But the Chiefs are firmly in it. In fact, I was told by two sources today that the Chiefs thought it was going to be wrapped up as soon as last night. And then it kind of drifted into today with Bell considering multiple teams. Tom, I am told, do not discount the possibility of the Dolphins here. We know that Bell lives in Miami, trains down there. Despite the fact they have the worst record amongst those three teams, that could wind up being his landing spot.
So that's the latest from Mike Garafolo. He also tweeted out that basically one of the holdups for Le'Veon Bell right now is he is trying to double dip when it comes to salary. So he is owed $5.5 million from the New York Jets. He's trying to get that $5.5 million and collect whatever he can get in this. So it's not an either or situation. He wants an and situation in both of those. And that is what could potentially be holding up a Le'Veon Bell contract from being signed at this point. I do think that one thing's very interesting in the negotiation with Le'Veon Bell. The Chiefs, Bills, and the Dolphins could not be on opposite ends of the spectrum. The Chiefs are a legitimate Super Bowl contender, maybe the Super Bowl favorite. I would say the Bills are certainly in the group. Maybe you want to put them in that same tier as Kansas City or that next tier, but they're on a short list of 8 to 10 teams that could potentially win the Super Bowl. The Dolphins are trying to be the 9th overall pick in the NFL draft. Maybe they sneak into the wild card because it's been expanded this year. It's going to be a really good test about what you value more. Do you want a chance to win a ring, or do you want to be warm and make as much money as possible? I'm not going to fault Le'Veon Bell for whatever decision he wants, but I do think it's going to tell us a lot about where he stands in 2020.
If I'm him, I stay in Miami. If that's where home is, and we were down in Miami for the Super Bowl, that's not too bad of a place to be any time of year. So, and I mean, he's 28 years old. He's not 38. This isn't a Terrell Suggs type situation where you're trying to get a ring, or in Suggs' case, another ring before you hang it up. He should have probably, assuming that he stays healthy and the fact that he didn't play for an entire year, maybe three, something like that, 4 years left, even at the running back position. So I think that Miami gives him the best opportunity to actually get carries. Like Rob always talks about how the running back position has been devalued. And I think he said yesterday he thinks it's the third least valuable position on the field. And we're talking about a backup at that position that hasn't been good for 4 years. So that's the thing. Like in Kansas City, I don't know how much of an impact he's actually going to have. If we agree with what Rob said, that the running back position has been devalued, and we agree that he's not going to be the starter, and the stats tell us that he hasn't been an above average running back since 2016, I don't know if Kansas City would be the best landing spot for him.
I'm looking at Miami. I mean, Miami's depth chart right now at running back is wide open. They have Miles Gaskin, who was a 7th-round draft pick, Matt Breida, who used to play for the San Francisco 49ers, Lynn Bowden Jr., who played quarterback in college for Kentucky.
I mean, yeah, I'm going there.
I mean, their depth chart is very wide open, where you instantly step in, and maybe not this week, but next week, you should be that team's number one running back. I would say you're not going to be that in Kansas City. I don't even think it's going to be a 1A, 1B scenario. I don't don't think it's the same with the Buffalo Bills either, with Devil Singletary, who put together a really solid rookie year. But again, they give you a chance to win double-digit games, sort of rehabilitate your image, play four teams that put more weapons around you, run for 500, maybe 550 yards this season, and then hit the open market next year with the jet stench off of you. It's just going to be really interesting to see what he prioritizes here. Maybe Miami's the one team that's willing to sign a multi-year deal because they have more cap space than the other teams. But at this point, I'm making Le'Veon Bell prove it. Like, hey, you weren't really successful in New York. You have been run out of two separate places. We're going to make you prove that you still got some tread in the tire and still some gas left in the tank. I wouldn't sign Le'Veon Bell for more than $1 million for the rest of the season.
It's kind of a weird spot for him because he's kind of asking himself, which stage is better? Like, is the stage better, like you said, down in Miami where, yeah, not a bunch of people are watching. The team's probably 50-50 at best, can actually play in the postseason, but he's probably going to get the bulk of the carries. Or you could go to a team in Kansas City that everybody's going to be watching, that probably is going to play in some big games, that might be playing in the biggest game, and you could have an impact. So going forward, what's better? Is it letting yourself be seen in the playoffs if you're only touching the ball five or six times, maybe in the Super Bowl, or is it carrying the ball 15 to 20 times down in Miami? He's got a decision to make.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll give you a brand spanking new Levine's List. But let's play a very simple game called Quarterback Categories, Rob.
We will start quarterback categories with this. I want you boys to name me a quarterback in the NFL you believe is overrated.
Sean, I actually think you and I are going to say the same person here. I think it's Deshaun Watson. I think we've put Watson in the same category as Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson without him doing things to actually put himself in the category of Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. I don't care that his yards per attempt are up a full 2 yards. He has regressed this year as a quarterback. Like, I don't really know how you can look at Deshaun Watson, look at what that offense has turned into, and come to any other conclusion. Accuracy is worse this year. Interception numbers are up this year for Deshaun Watson, and the team isn't having a lot of success. I would say Deshaun Watson is probably, if we're talking about what we've seen in the production, I think he's overrated.
Definitely. That's the right answer. I mean, the first year through the first six games, Deshaun Watson had 18 touchdowns and six picks. So he was basically Patrick Mahomes the year before Patrick Mahomes was Patrick Mahomes, where he was averaging three touchdowns and a pick and had the QBR over 100 and his team was winning. And then he got hurt. But since then, there hasn't been a ton of improvement. 26 touchdowns a year after that when he was healthy. 26 touchdowns last year. Right now, like you said, on pace for less than that. So, yeah, it's got to be Deshaun Watson. If not him, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo. I always feel like Jimmy's been placed in a couple of really advantageous situations, obviously in San Francisco and before that backing up Tom Brady. But you look at his career numbers, 48 touchdowns, 23 interceptions. They're not going to blow you away. But he's not nearly as overrated as Deshaun Watson. That dude, I think we're finding out, is you got to pay him. I mean, you have to do what Houston did. You couldn't not pay that guy and let him potentially turn into the guy that we've been talking about the last couple of years for another team. But it's far from a sure thing that he's going to turn into the six-time All-Pro and Super Bowl champion that we've been talking about the last couple of years.
I mean, I'm still high on the ability. I'm just really curious to see who they're going to hire that's going to get the most out of the quarterback position. Like, I would say he has regressed as a player, where I would say we've seen Lamar Jackson progress as a passer, certainly made a huge jump from year one to year two and has stayed pretty steady in that. We've seen Mahomes make little improvements over his career. I know we started at a much higher place. Hell, we've seen Josh Allen really improve and take that next step. Like, I'm curious who his Sean McVay is going to be. Like, I think Goff is in the right situation with the right coach to get the most out of his ability. I don't think that's what Bill O'Brien was. I think that's a major reason of why he got fired, is he couldn't maximize the quarterback position. I mean, this should be a job that if you're a quarterback guru or an offensive mind, you should want to coach Deshaun Watson. Are they going to put him in the right situation and find his Kyle Shanahan?
Maybe it's Eric Bieniemy. We'll see.
On the flip side of that coin, I want you boys to tell me someone who is underrated this year at the quarterback position.
My underrated player is going to be Jared Goff. I think Jared Goff has been appropriately labeled as a system quarterback. I do think he benefits from being in Sean McVay's offense. I also think that he is maximized being in the offense. If you take away the first season in which he played with Jeff Fisher, he is completing 65% of his passes, 90 touchdowns, 38 interceptions, and the Rams are 37-15 in those 52 games since he's been there. Last year, We talk about the Rams like they were a 6-win football team. They won 9 games last year. Offensive line had some problems and they couldn't run the football as effectively. He's got them in a really tough division at 4-1 right now. I think Jared Goff's the most underrated quarterback in the NFL.
No, it's the Titans quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. Since he's been their quarterback, he's won 14 of 18 games. And this year, he's got 9 touchdowns and 1 interception. And I'm not going to pretend like he's the greatest quarterback in the league, but sometimes you're just good at your job. Like, you just get your job done, and then you leave, you clock out, and you feel good about yourself. That's Ryan Tannehill. And I don't know what happened, because he was not that guy in Miami, and it wasn't for lack of opportunity. He was there for a long time, and then all of a sudden he gets to Tennessee. And Tennessee obviously feels the same way that I do. They gave him that, what was like a $90 million contract this offseason. So at some point we're going to talk about this guy as an actually good quarterback and not just a guy that's been playing like a good quarterback. Ryan Tannehill is wildly underrated.
I'm really surprised that the offensive coordinator for Tennessee hasn't really been in more conversations. We know that Vrabel is a defensive guy, but I mean, what they've done with Ryan Tannehill, he's a more accurate passer than he was in Miami at age 31. Like, not many people sort of find that accuracy that late in their career. Either you have it or you don't have it. I mean, he's been downright fantastic. He has been the starter for 14 games. They have won 13 of those games. They lost the one playoff game to the Kansas City Chiefs. He's completing 70% of his passes, 31 touchdowns and 7 interceptions with a 9.0 yards per attempt and has a 116 quarterback rating in 14 starts. Tannehill hasn't been good. He's been borderline elite since he's taken over for Tennessee.
I had to Google who their offensive coordinator was when you were talking. Arthur Smith, and he got there last year, so the timing is right for him. I am surprised that not only has his name not come up, I don't even know who the hell he is, but if you've been with the Titans since 2019, and the Titans have been wildly overachieving since you've got there, you're like, yeah, his name, it feels like it probably should come up.
And we talk a whole lot about Greg Roman, who's the offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, and what they've done with Lamar Jackson. And what they've done in Tennessee is as impressive as what Baltimore's done with Lamar Jackson.
We continue on with quarterback categories. I want you boys to tell me who fits this category. Who's the surprise of 2020?
Hey, by the way, that dude, Arthur Smith, their coordinator, he just turned 38 years old. So if you want, you know, a coach of the future, maybe that's the guy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I certainly think that he should be a more prominent name that's out there. I'm going to actually say Josh Allen is it. I'm not surprised that Josh Allen is playing well. I thought he played well last season. I'm surprised that the accuracy is there from Josh Allen. Last year, 32 quarterbacks in the NFL qualified for completion percentage. He was dead last in the NFL with 58.8% completion percentage. Just think about that. That ain't good. It's terrible. You're the worst when it comes to completing passes in the NFL. He was also bottom 8 in the NFL when it came to yards per attempt. The only quarterbacks last year to have a lower yards per attempt were him, were Brady, Dalton, Jones, Brissett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky. That is a terrible category to be in. He has absolutely turned things around as a passer. My biggest surprise is Josh Allen. I thought he was always going to be a guy who completes around 62% of his passes. This year, he's in the 70s. I'm going to give my biggest surprise to Josh Allen.
Yeah, Josh Allen's on the short list for MVP right now, but not on as short of a list is my guy Aaron Rodgers, who the last couple of years, he had 26 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. It's a great ratio. Everybody will take that. But 26 touchdowns is not, in today's NFL, that's not that great. He had 25-2 the year before. Again, great touchdown to interception ratio, but not enough touchdowns. This year, 13 touchdowns, no interceptions, a QBR of 129. You told me this a couple of weeks ago, and you were right. He plays on the best football team. Their offense is putting up numbers that are historical right now. Now, again, it's through 5 games. By the way, he's also completing 71% of passes. To me, Rob, that's been the biggest surprise at quarterback. I didn't think Aaron Rodgers was dead or done or buried like a lot of other people did. I also didn't think that he had a chance to win the MVP and win another Super Bowl, and he clearly does right now. Besides guys named Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers has played better than every quarterback in football.
Are we willing to throw Derek Carr in that category for biggest surprise so far this season?
For sure, yeah.
I mean, I think Derek Carr should certainly be in that category. I think Derek Carr has been fantastic this year.
Yeah, Derek Carr, what is he at now? 11 touchdowns, 1 interception. His team's 3-2. And if you look, like kind of like I was talking about with Aaron Rodgers, the last couple of seasons for Derek Carr, not big touchdown numbers. He had 26 last year. I think he had like 21 the year before that. And now he's on pace to have close to 40. So absolutely Derek Carr belongs on that list.
We continue on. The flip side of surprise is always the disappointments. You tell me who's been the biggest disappointment at quarterback in 2020.
I'm actually going to throw Kirk Cousins on that list. I haven't been always the biggest fan of Kirk Cousins, but the numbers have always been there. He's worse at just about every single metric that you can have for a quarterback. Yards per attempt is down. Completion percentage are down. Interception numbers are up. Last year, he threw 444 passes and only had 6 interceptions. He has 7 interceptions this year and 139 passes. So the interception percentage is way up this year than it was last year. Kirk Cousins, to me, is by far and away the biggest disappointment this year at the position.
No, it's actually your guy who also has 7 interceptions. Carson Wentz this year has been an absolute train wreck. 4 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. His team is no good. He's completing less than 60% of his passes. And the one time that his team won the Super Bowl a few years ago, he was on the sidelines. Like, Carson Wentz is in danger as soon as maybe next year of being a backup in the NFL after even heading into this season, a lot of people had high hopes for him. So I think that when we're going to look back on the career of Carson Wentz, it's going to be one of the weirders. Wait, was he good? Did he suck? He won a Super Bowl, right? Sort of. No, not really. And I think that we're talking about 2 or 3 years. Dude's probably out of the league. Last year, he was okay. This year, he's been absolutely awful. It's got to be Carson Wentz. What a major disappointment.
I will say this really quickly about Kirk Cousins. I think it has maybe changed my feelings on Stephon Diggs. Like, I always thought he was just a really solid number 2, and Thielen was their 1. Minnesota had 2 legitimate number 1s, that taking away that second option for Kirk Cousins has just drastically changed their offense. He went from being a more than capable quarterback last year to being a bottom 8 QB in the league this year. That's why I'm so down on the way Kirk Cousins has played.
Our final quarterback category, you tell me, what quarterback in 2020 has the highest upside?
It's sort of weird because I think that Herbert is the correct answer. Like, I'm just trying to think of anybody who is in that same vein. Like, you can't really say Kyler Murray. He won Rookie of the Year last year, and there aren't a whole lot of young quarterbacks that have emerged. Like, I think the right answer on this is Justin Herbert. I think we have seen enough flashes in the way that he's battled. I think he has a chance to be a star. I'm not giving it a high percentage chance. I don't feel like he's a can't-miss kind of guy, but I think these next 18 months are really critical. In a lot of these situations, when a team has a quarterback that shows the promise that Herbert showed, they really go all in. They go get another big-time wide receiver. They go get a running back to pair with Austin Eckler. I think they already have a lot of the pieces on defense. I think Herbert's the correct answer on here. I'm just really curious where they go from here to help him take that next step.
Herbert's clearly the answer here because Joe Burrow, we all think he's going to be good, but he doesn't have enough talent around him to really know it yet. We haven't seen Tua just yet. We haven't seen Love yet. So of the rookie quarterbacks, it's clearly Justin Herbert.
I've been actually really impressed with Burrow, what I've got to see so far this season. I think he's really battled and competed, and I don't really think he has weapons. I think it's Joe Mixon. I think he has a couple of nice complimentary weapons, but they made a significant investment this year in AJ Green, and he's been bad.
Let me give you an outside-the-box one here. How about Cam Newton when it comes to upside? Like, heading into this year, we were saying if Cam can stay healthy, maybe the Patriots have a chance. And then after a couple of games, we were saying, damn, Cam looks like he's really good, and so do the Patriots. So the upside there, of course, is still, if he's able to stay healthy, the Patriots are going to have a hell of a decision next year because they just gave him $1 million. Like you mentioned, they can franchise tag him, but then they got to give him like $27 million next year. So Cam's in a really funky situation here where if he can stay healthy, keep playing well, and maybe win a playoff game for his team, he can either hold the Patriots hostage to an extent or hit the open market, and I'm sure that there's going to be a team or two interested in him next offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think he's going to be the quarterback for the New England Patriots. I think they franchise tag him and come to an agreement, sort of like what happened with Indianapolis and Phillip Rivers, or oddly enough, Tampa Bay and what they did with Tom Brady. Coming up in a little bit, we'll get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. I have a question to ask you, a toss-up question. Do you consider Buffalo going to 4 Super Bowls a success or a failure?
I mean, it's got to be a success. In the midst of it, when it was happening, I'd imagine that it was embarrassing, can't be the word. Like, whenever we bring up your boy LeBron and people always say, yeah, he's won it 4 times when he gets to the finals, but he's lost it 6. Like, that's some sort of an indictment. Well, he got there 10 times and they got there 4 straight times, which is nearly impossible to do. So we would definitely look back at history if they would have won one of those. It didn't matter if it was the first one or if it was the second or third or the last one. And we would say, wow, what an unbelievable team that was. Think about all the stars they had with Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and Andre Reed and Bruce Smith and Steve Tasker, all these different dudes. But the fact that they didn't end up winning it, I think people harshly look back at that team and say, oh man, what a disappointment they were. How can you say that a team that made it to 4 straight Super Bowls was a disappointment? So I actually think that they're kind of unfairly looked at. by history.
Yeah, I'm with you. I always say with LeBron, and I think that's a really good comparison, like, we don't look at getting to the summit as enough of a accomplishment. Like, I don't know if it's Jordan that sort of changed that because he went six times and won in every
Jordan
single
Montana,
thing.
That's what it but was. They both got there and won every time.
I don't look down on Brady because of what happened with David Tyree. Like, I don't look down on Brady because of the Philly special. Like, sometimes you get to this high point and you're going to lose to a really good team. So it's certainly disappointing that you couldn't cash in one of them, but you're telling me a lot of cities wouldn't trade the success of a half decade run of which you go to the Super Bowl every single year. You're telling me right now Cleveland wouldn't have loved to be in that situation, or the Chargers wouldn't have loved to be in that situation, or hell, Kansas City in the 90s. Think about how disappointing it was in Kansas City all those years of losing in the first and second round of the playoffs. You're telling me it would have been disappointing to go to the Super Bowl? I'm with you. I do think they get unfairly judged. I wouldn't call it an overwhelming success because you didn't win one of them, but it is a success nonetheless.
Would you call the Atlanta Braves in the 90s an overwhelming success? I mean, they did win one, but they got there so often they only won one.
I wouldn't put it in overwhelming, but I think it's more of a success than what the Bills did. Like, I don't know the word right now. I don't have my thesaurus in front of me right now, but it is more of a success than what the Bills did. But I wouldn't call it overwhelming success.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like,
I would say the Yankees in the 90s were an overwhelming success.
Well, yeah, but cashing in once, like, it's hard to say, unless you're the Chiefs right now and everybody. And sometimes I wonder if it's just us here, CDOT, in our little 6'10 bubble in Kansas City, and we're talking about, hey, this team is going to be disappointed if they don't win two or three, and I come on and say they're going to win four or five. Is everybody doing that with the Chiefs? Like, are radio stations all over the country saying that Pat's definitely going to win multiple Super Bowls? Because it feels like here, I haven't really talked to anybody. We haven't got a texter or a caller that doesn't think the Chiefs are going to win another Super Bowl after this.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk about Patrick Mahomes, and he commented on what time Monday's game is and how it is an inconvenience for you, the fans. And Sean thinks that the Chiefs line is too big, but I think you'll be surprised at his stance. But before we do all that, let's have a brand spanking new Levine's List.
So we were just talking about NFL quarterbacks. For the next 3 years, these are the quarterbacks I would want to have most. I left Dak off the list.
Are all these guys already in the NFL?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if, like, Trevor Lawrence was on the list. I wasn't sure.
That's fair. I left Dak off the list because it just, at this point, I don't know. At number 10, Jared Goff. Jared Goff's one of those guys that when he's good, he's great. When he's bad, he's awful. But the truth is, there's a lot more good than bad in his career.
I've always said that about Jared.
And if I can get him for the next 3 years, how old is dude? Like 26, 27? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll take it.
I always feel like your first impression as a young player is what people really stick with. And the fact that Goff was so bad with Jeff Fisher, I don't feel like people give him enough credit for how he's turned things around with Sean McVay.
Yeah, the problem might have just been Jeff Fisher. At number 9, Aaron Rodgers. And the only reason I've got him so low, he's 36 years old. So how good is Aaron Rodgers going to be at 37, 38? If he's as good as he is this year, then he's way too low. But at some point, these dudes just get old. At number 8.
That's what's happening to Drew Brees.
Joe Burrow. Now, of course, since he's going to have to surround him with a lot of talent over the next 3 years, because the problem with Burrow is he doesn't have anything. He doesn't have a good offensive line. I guess you could say Joe Mixon's good. He's aight. He's fine. No wide receivers. I don't believe in the offense that he's got around him right now, but I do believe in Joe Burrow himself. At number 7, the aforementioned Justin Herbert. A lot of the same stuff I just said about Joe Burrow. Like, I think most of the Chargers' talent is actually on the defensive side of the ball. Let's see what they can pair with Justin Herbert. Like, see if you can maybe build a good offensive line around him, maybe get him a number 1 wide receiver over the next couple of years. At number 6, Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray has shown flashes. Like, last year, Kyler Murray was phenomenal. Kyler Murray has basically been the quarterback that everybody thought the Baker Mayfield was going to be after year one. And this year, he looks really good too. I think over the next couple of years, we could be talking about a top 3 or 4 quarterback in the entire NFL. At number 5, Deshaun Watson for the next 3 years. And here's why. As much smack as I talk on him and say that he's overrated and hasn't improved, his coach has been Bill O'Brien. So there's a reason why Lamar Jackson's been able to grow at the position. He's got John Harbaugh. Same thing with Patrick Mahomes. He's got Andy Reid. Old boy had Bill O'Brien. So the next 3 years, let's just see who the coach is. At number 4, Josh Allen. After watching him a couple of nights ago, like, that's only the second time I've watched a full Buffalo Bills game since he's been their quarterback. And both times I've come away going, I'm not that impressed. It was a playoff game versus Houston.
You would take Allen the next 3 years over Lamar?
Yeah, and Lamar's next, as always. Thanks for stealing my thunder.
I thought you just said Lamar.
No, I got Josh Allen at 4, and I got Lamar at 3. So it was Deshaun at 5. It was Josh Allen at 4. It's Lamar at 3. Yeah, I mean, I've seen enough from Lamar Jackson where maybe his MVP season people still had questions, but look at his numbers this year. Don't judge him what he did against the Chiefs. Every other game, he's still been fantastic this year. And then at number 2 and number 1, I think everybody's probably got the same guys. Russell Wilson, who it feels like he's been in the league forever, but he's only 31 years old. So if I can get him at ages 32, 33, and 34, yeah, sign me up. And then Patrick Mahomes, I think he's going to be pretty good at ages 26, 27, and 28. That is today's Levine's List, brought to you by 7th Street Casino. 7th Street Casino is where it's at.
Speaking of quarterbacks, we will have Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner join us coming up at 3:15. Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner will be on the show coming up in about 15 to 20 minutes. Speaking of Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes spoke on the Game Time for Monday's game against the Buffalo Bills. We'll share with you what he had to say. Stick around. It's a drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.